your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Bright the cheeks and warm the heart, for tread the circle thrice about, to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what you will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet Again, everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, a few years back, Steve Parsons shared his new book, Ghostology, The Art of the Ghost Hunter, with us. And recently, because things go changing over time, a revised edition of the book is now available. And he's here tonight, or in this case, in this morning, to discuss some of the new thoughts and techniques that might have been reconglobulated over time. Oh, my God. You know what? I've been around Ron Kolick too long, I swear. I'm catching all these words. So for those of you who don't know, Steve is a veteran investigator and researcher of ghosts, hauntings, and related human experiences, as well as being the author of numerous published articles, works on ghosts, ghost hunting, and related subjects. He's an in-front-of-the-camera presenter and a behind-the-camera advisor on numerous paranormal documentary shows for the UK and overseas broadcasting. The founder of Parascience, and his forthright and no-nonsense approach is well-known throughout the paranormal investigation circles, and he has a hard-won reputation for producing results, which is why Ron Kolick, Steve's partner in crime on their show Ghost Chronicles International, always mentions the fact that the Wall Street Journal refers to Steve as the gold standard of paranormal investigations, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that too. So there you have it. As always, we look forward to questions and comments that come in from the chat room, and they usually ask really good questions, so it's also not too late for those of you live listeners who aren't in chat to pop over and join us at paraxradionetwork.com. All right, business taken care of. So good 2 a.m. in the morning, Steve, and thank you once again for losing sleep over me and, of course, our listeners do.
Good morning from tomorrow.
We time traveled, didn't we? Yes.
Yeah. Good morning from your future.
Thank you. I think it's a little scary.
In fact, weirdly, the sun is starting to rise in the sky because obviously it's close to midsummer. So it's just starting to get light outside, and we're considerably more north, our latitude. So, in fact, Scotland is in perpetual daylight this time of year.
They are?
At the very tips of Scotland, yeah, perpetual daylight that far north. But like we're only at latitude 52, 53, something like that.
Mm.
Polar bear country.
Wow. That, you know, it's kind of scary to think of 24-hour brightness, but it happens. Yeah. What can
that's
I tell?
That's why they invented curtains.
and blinders, you know, those things that chichi people wear to cover their eyes because they're so delicate.
Blinders? I call them Ray-Bans.
That too. I was talking about the ones they sleep in, sleep masks.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see them on a lot of the transatlantic flights.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense. It's bad enough you're going to get jet lag as opposed to, you know, no sleep at all. Yeah, it's crazy. All right. CC in chat room said there's nothing scarier than a Scotsman without sleep. Okay. I haven't, you know, I don't know that personally, but she probably might. All right. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to get to the point. This revised edition of Ghostology has up-to-date discussions of some new methods and techniques that you write about in the first edition. But before we get into that, and for those who might not have heard the show the last time around, would you explain the term Ghostology, what it is, what it means?
It means nothing at all. It's a combination of words, and it's not one that I can claim to have invented. In fact, it was first used, I think, in about 1922 or 23. Another author used the word ghostology, and there have been, I think mine was the next, and then there's been a couple more since, as the word caught on a little bit. An ology is simply the study of, and stick it with ghosts, you have ghostology, the study of ghosts, or in this case, the art of the ghost hunter. So it's a look at how you ghost hunt. It isn't a how-to ghost hunt guide.
No.
You know, there's I wouldn't dream of competing with Zach.
Oh, God forbid.
but say I write my own books as well.
Well, that's true. And you know, it is very difficult to keep up with technology and trends and research and the like. And as time goes by, revisions are necessary. But no matter how often you update a published book or article, you're always going to be behind the eight ball because, you know, 5 minutes later, there's new information coming out. And then, you know, you have to do more research to see if you consider it valid and even worth taking into consideration. And then you can't really update a book until you, you know, have it's just a big deal. So, you know, when do you think enough time goes or enough reason goes before you make your revisions?
Well, that's a very good question. Growing up, I used to head down to the library. I used to dig out the books of the earlier generation of ghost investigators and ghost hunters, the famous Harry Price and Peter Underwood and Elliot O'Donnell and others. And the advice and the information that these books contained was fine. But a lot when they referred to some of the methods, some of the ethics, and particularly with the technology, it was, you know, completely out of date. And just before we went into lockdown, so the early part of 2020, the Society for Psychical Research had commissioned a new set of guidance notes. The first set, which is a general set of guidance notes, a kind of stepwise look at good practice for investigators. Not a finger wagging, you must do it this way because we're the Society for Psychical Research. And but simply a set of foundation stones that if followed, the inevitable result will be the quality of the investigation will go up. During the launch of that book, it was a lot of questions were asked by audiences and listeners, and they all seem to relate to the equipment. And so the SPR realized that there was a big deficit because there was one chapter on the equipment, but it was a general chapter. And that so they sent me off and said, go and write a book about a guidance set of guidance notes for equipment. And it was whilst I was working on that project that I started to relook at the current technology that was being used, and it started to dawn on me that my own book, Ghostology, was reaching reaching its sell-by date with there were new methods, there were new techniques coming along. You know, even the orb, God forbid, was making a comeback.
Oh,
you know, it's like the comeback kid, that thing. You know, there are, you know, new. Well, I mean, there's a chapter in the new book, which is an entirely new chapter, and it's called Game Consoles Cat Toys game consoles and Tesla cars, all of which have been used by innovative ghost investigators seeking proof of the afterlife. Now, it was, you know, as you can imagine, a Tesla car, can you use it as a ghost hunting tool? Well, apparently you can. And in order to make my research, you know, I had to go and visit a Tesla dealer and try it out. Yeah, I didn't go ghost hunting with the Tesla, but I did actually get to sit in and try the technology that the investigators are using in the Tesla car, because I've got to understand it. I can't write about something I don't know about.
Sure.
And I can't be critical or give a worthwhile opinion on something that I don't understand. So when new technology comes along, I have to get a piece of this technology, buy the item of equipment, sometimes pull it apart to find out what's inside it, look at how it's being used, look at how the maker intended it to be used. Because what we've gotten, if we go back, say, 5 or 10 years, the majority of ghost hunting equipment tended to be adapted off-the-shelf equipment. The K2 is a good example of that. It was intended, it was made by Safe Range originally, the model K2, and it was designed to let people measure the electromagnetic background in their homes, because there were concerns about power lines and cell phones and cell towers. And but the ghost hunters turned that into a tool for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But in recent years, we've seen companies like InfraReady and Paranologies in the States going off and completely starting with a fresh canvas and designing their own ghost hunting technology. I think it's notable usually for its steampunk retro design and its extraordinarily high price.
Yes, of course. I mean, there are so many gizmos and gadgets that have been around for ages, with new ones popping up all the time. And so, do you believe that any of these have enough merit to consider them an advancement in ghost hunting technique, or are they just because people will buy anything just about?
Well, unfortunately, there is a tendency for people to swallow the advertising and to, you know, go with the hype. They see Zaki using it, they see, you know, their other investigators, heroes on television using it and getting good results. And so they'll shell out the several hundred dollars and they'll go out and get one of their own. Some of them have, you know, these additional, like, this is a limited edition blue one, red one, green one, one with crystals on it. Or numbered. You know, I've got number 7. Oh, I only got number 6.
Mm-hmm.
what you've got to remember, whenever you take equipment is that absolutely the overwhelming majority of evidence relating to cases of haunting, the appearances of ghosts and apparitions or poltergeist phenomena, is in the form of personal testimony and the accounts of the witnesses. And it's an absolute unassailable fact that to date, there has been not one single device or item of equipment that has yet demonstrated the reality of any of those phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you might think it's a bit strange to write about them in books when they've never worked. You know, we've never captured a ghost on camera that can be verified. We've never captured the recording of, you know, a ghost speaking, or walking down an empty hallway, or, you know, all of this is, still speculative whether, you know, whether the proof exists. Often it's more in the eye of the ear or eye of the beholder. And you might think, you know, well, why is he even writing about it? But it's something that, you know, every time you talk about equipment for use in investigations, you have to consider that reality. Mm-hmm. But does that mean that using equipment for making measurements, gathering data when you are investigating a case is futile? You know, driven only by hope, belief and wishful thinking? And the answer to that is emphatically no, because the use of equipment has allowed investigators to examine, measure, record in the minutest detail the environment and something about where these phenomena are reported. You know, if we use careful measurements and observations, we can test the claims and the reports of the witnesses. And it's, in many instances, the equipment has assisted or allowed the investigator to determine the cause of the event or the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay, so let me jump to one other thing that's very popular as far as equipment goes right now, and that is smartphones, because there are tons and tons of apps that can do wondrous things, so they say. There's no need to use anything else, you know, that I read an article the other day that said you can throw out your K2 meters, you can throw out your RIM pods, you can throw out everything. All you need is a smartphone. Just download the apps and you're good to go. And it kind of reminds me of a one-man band who can play half a dozen instruments at the same time, you know. I think people are just, maybe some of them have some merit, but I just don't trust people, especially smartphone apps, because there are just so many that aren't what they say they're supposed to be. What do you think?
Well, an app is only an application. It's a little piece of software. And the smartphone is actually an incredibly powerful little computer. Mm-hmm. And if all computers need software. Unfortunately, the vast majority of the ghost hunting apps that are out there are designed to put ghosts into pictures to capture, you know, mimic ghost radars or EVP devices. It's perfectly possible now in real time to take a photograph and before you've shown it to the person standing next to you to have stuck a ghost in it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can put Abraham Lincoln into a photograph before the person standing next to you has realized you've done it and then claim that there was nobody there. I mean, you've got apps that cover electronic voice phenomena. You've got ones that just reading some of the adverts while I was talking, the sensor sweep instrument utilizes a complex pattern detection algorithm coupled with your device's enhanced sensor array to provide spatial representation of potential paranormal activity. Now, I don't think we're allowed to swear on your show.
Are you glad? You swear on yours, you can swear on mine.
Well, I mean, it's just a lot of words joined together that mean nothing. Mm-hmm. The geoscope instrument, using an advanced triple axis redundancy filter. Now, what is a redundancy filter? The geoscope instrument has the ability to magnify even the slightest terrainal and subterranean fluctuations. And there's also a spatial displacement instrument. Now, they are ludicrous. They are as ludicrous as the words that they're using to describe themselves. But that doesn't mean that the device is ludicrous or using the device is ludicrous, because, as I said at the start, it is an intensely powerful little computer. It's packed full of very sensitive sensors. For example, let's just look at the most basic ones, the camera. Mm-hmm. Back when Ghostology, the original edition, was published in 2015, you know, the top of the range iPhones back then, and I'm sorry, Android users, but I can only talk about Apple because I've only had iPhones. I realized, you know, I wasn't going to make the mistake right from the off, buy an Android. Bad mistake. But, you know, you've had an 8 megapixel camera. It could do HD with one of the cameras. Now the iPhone 12s, the current generations, are several hundred frames a second UHD 4K. They've got, you know, multiple microphones. They've got, but some of the most interesting sensors are actually quite useful. So yeah, I mean, you've got a perfectly good video camera. You've got a perfectly good still camera. Mm-hmm. Everybody's carrying these around with them now. You've got an excellent sound recorder. The inbuilt microphone is good, but you can buy plug-on accessory microphones for a few tens of dollars. And you then have something that is as capable. Well, you could use it for music production.
Yeah.
It's that good. It's used by professional news broadcasters. It's used by professional musicians, as you know, and you could apply that to the camera as well. So there are two of the sensors that are, you know, industry standard.
Yeah, I upgraded from a 10 to a 12. And
you've got the LiDAR sensor.
I didn't get the heavy. I just got the main one. It doesn't have
that LiDAR. The LiDAR is fitted, which stands for light distance and ranging. So it's like radar, light radar. The 12 and the top of the range, the corresponding iPad models, have a new sensor called LiDAR.
Oh.
Now, you can't control that. It works with the camera, and it allows the camera to focus better and to do cleverer things. But there are apps available that allow you to interrogate the raw data from the sensor in different ways.
Mm.
So you have, in effect, a very, very clever sensor that knows how far it is away from everything else that's around it. Now, you can then use that technology. It's not dissimilar to the Kinect camera. It's not dissimilar to the Tesla car. The Tesla car uses it for spotting pedestrians in the road and other obstacles and other moving vehicles. The Kinect camera uses it for detecting motion when playing games. So it's more that the phone is being misused and getting itself a bad rap rather than anything that's wrong with the use of the phone. I mean, let's look at another quick sensor, the accelerometer, the one that detects whether you're walking or running up and down stairs, whether you've stood up, sat down, whether it, you know, and then bitches at you that you haven't done enough walking or standing up or exercise and sets little goals for you. The accelerometer sensors. Now, the one that's in the iPhone is one that's used in military UAVs.
Hmm.
It was designed for military UAV use. It's incredibly sensitive.
Wow.
When we wind the clock back a decade, there were some paranormal researchers in the UK that were measuring the Earth's magnetic field following the work of Persinger. And they were using Honeywell geomagnetic sensors that were costing them around £1,000 each.
Mm.
Now, the iPhone, all models since the iPhone 5 have had a magnetometer. If your phone's got a compass in it, it has a magnetometer.
Yes, mine has a compass, yeah.
The magnetometer is more sensitive. It's missile technology. It's used in Sidewinder missiles, for example, so that the phone knows which where the Earth's magnetic field and where the middle of the Earth is and which way it's going. And it can use that with the GPS. It can use that with... It's fantastically sensitive. It can measure the Earth's magnetic field down to one picotesla. Now, ordinarily, none of those sensors are used by you except in a, you know, so it can bitch at you for going up and downstairs and not standing up and sitting down. But you can actually get applications that allow you to use the data in other ways. The US Geological Survey, for example, they were spending, you know, thousands of dollars, it was in California as well, fitting out seismic stations all across the country, and realized that if you basically glue an iPhone to you know, a steel, you know, solid steel support that's driven into the earth. The iPhone sensors, the accelerometers and GPS sensors, and the phone could just send the data back all by itself from its own sensors. And so they just bought a bunch of them. And they found that the quality of the data improved.
See, that's why I've always had Mac and Apple stuff, yes.
I routinely, a lot of the extra sensors, like thermometers and such, that aren't built in, you can plug in through the Lightning ports and such. So I've been a strong advocate of, you know, tablet computing and smartphone technology being used, because you don't have to carry a huge big bag of kit.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But don't use it as a ghost radar.
And if Abraham
Lincoln... And don't forget, you know, while we're on the subject of phones and and tablet computers, don't forget what a lot of us are now wearing. We have this technology on our wrist.
Yes.
You know, the smartwatch. Mm-hmm. And the sensors in that are the equal of what's in the watch. So you have, you know, an additional set of tools. You can use it to, you've got blood oxygen sensors. You've got the magnetometer, you've got the accelerometer, you've got a gyroscope, a barometer, GPS. And you can just send all the data from those sensors to the cloud and then collect them when you get back home anyway.
It's amazing. What's amazing, too, is we got to take a break because it went by really, really quick. So when we return, we'll talk about some of the specific maybe revisions in the book and some other stuff. So if you're sitting there, get up, get a nibble, something to drink, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
It's that time of year again, my pagan and witchy folks. Time for Witches Fest USA, a pagan fair where we gather dressed as magical folk we love, like fays, elves, sprites, and more. There will be mystical vendors, enchanting performers, and magical presenters of all kinds, paths, and traditions. The fair runs from July 9th through the 11th. On Saturday, July 10th, you can come in person to spend the day on Astor Place in New York City and enjoy free workshops, live performances, vendors, and presenters. Friday and Saturday will be streaming online to the world stage. There are over 95 workshops to choose from in real time or view them on demand at your convenience. For information and registration, go to www.witchesfestusa.org. That's WITCHSFESTUSA.org. Get caught up in the magic and enjoy.
Hey everyone, it's Marla. If you like tonight's episode of Stirring the Cauldron and the archive podcast as well, take a look at the show's YouTube channel and check out the dozens of shows that are there just waiting to be heard. New shows are added each week, and while you're there, why not subscribe? It's free. And if you click on that tiny little bell icon at the top of the page, you'll be notified when new shows are available. Just go to youtube.com and then type in Stirring the Cauldron Para X and the link will appear. Just like magic.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And my guest tonight is Steve Parsons, the author of Ghostology, The Art of the Ghost Hunter, who is a very polite man, and so far I haven't heard him mumbling under his breath because now it's 2:30 in the morning over there, and so I think it might be safe to pick up where we left off since there are no grumbles, and let's talk a little bit about some of the new or different things in the revised edition, because I had both books and I was going back and forth. You know, you don't, it's not like you said, okay, page 36 is blah, blah, blah. So what are the main things that you have updated or revised?
Actually, I've revised every single chapter. But the revisions are subtle because the information hasn't really, you know, the core of the information doesn't change. but they're all new techniques. There's a whole section that wasn't in before, which expands dramatically on, for example, the smartwatch. But literally every single chapter, every single section has been gone through and looked at and tweaked, updated, adapted, changed. You know, it wasn't just that, oh, well, I'll just change the pixel counts on the phones and update 6 to 12 and, you know, call it job done. It took nearly 6 months to do. So, you know, it is effectively, you know, from afresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, but you'd be kind of silly if you didn't do it that way, because then somebody's going to say, well, you know, you fixed this, but you certainly didn't, you know, you left that out. Yeah.
The other thing, I mean, there are other small changes too, that, I mean, cumulatively, there are effectively 20 extra pages worth of information. Because the page count jumped between the two books by 20. So there are 20 extra pages of information in total. But every, for example, in the history section that looks at the history of psychical research and apparitions, the original section was entitled Men of Science and Learning. But 5 years ago, that was more acceptable as a term. You know, we're much more aware of gender issues and diversity issues, and that, to reflect that, you know, that does have a single word change. It became Figures of Science and Learning, because, you know, there are as many women, you know, from the earliest days to the present time, involved in psychical research at every level, from the, you know, the interested weekend ghost hunter right up to, you know, the professors in parapsychology departments. You know, it's a pretty even mix. So the term, you know, so it's little subtle things like that throughout the book. Mm-hmm. And actually a couple of old typos that had got through from the first edition as well.
That you're only human. The publisher. Oh,
the new one's got two. One is deliberate, though.
Okay, that's good. I was on a show one time when my first book came out, my Ghost of Hollywood book, and apparently the publisher missed a whole lot of things. And so here we are talking about the book, and the man that was interviewing me said, now, you know, there are 12 really bad typos in this book. Look on the back cover, for one. You know, what do you say? I mean, I didn't do it. They did it. You know, and I'm like, oh, my God. And he starts pointing them out one at a time. And I'm like, thanks very much. That's really
people like that just really deserve, you know, it's horrible to happen, don't they? When the very first book I wrote, which was Paracoustics, the one I wrote with Cal Cooper, obviously that book, which deals with sound, there was a lot of technical stuff in it, and it was important that you get the technical bits right, because you're dealing with, you know, techie stuff, and there's always a nerd out there who's like, well, you said it was 0.78 speed of sound in bubblegum. And so we were very, very careful, and we sent it all off to the proofreader, and the proofreader decided that she didn't like the way some of it was written. It didn't read right. The content was fine, but she thought she could improve the way it had been written and change great swathes of the technical stuff.
Oh.
Which caused a nightmare, because that very nearly got through to the printing stage.
Wow. That would have been terrible.
And then there was the famous double paragraph that got through as well, or nearly got through. Well, we were trying to fix the problem of caused by the proofreader. And we were cutting and pasting back and forth, or I was back and forth between the original manuscript and the one that had been proofread. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not the, you know, one click on the mouse too many, you end up with the same thing twice.
Yeah, been there, done that. Yeah, it's not a lot of fun, but, you know, it happens.
Yes. The trials of it. You know, nobody would believe that, you know, I'm very old school. My, you know, the screen on my iMac here is covered in Tippex.
Covered in what?
Tippex, whiteout.
Yeah, okay. Do you know who invented that? Do you know who invented that?
No, but I'm very grateful to them.
You'd like to know?
Yeah.
Okay, it's Mike Nesmith of the Monkees. His mother invented.
Right?
Yes. Fantastic. A monkey's mother invented that.
There we go.
Yeah, all right.
Liquid, what do you call it in America? We call it Tippex.
Liquid paper sometimes, or whiteout. It depends. You know, there's different brands. So, yeah. But liquid paper, I think, was the one that it started that way.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Interesting.
But, I can hand on heart. If you've got the first edition, then there's no real reason. You know, you're not going to be too hard done to if you don't get the revised edition. He says doing his sale, the publisher's not going to like that. But if you want the latest, you know, there are 20 extra pages of information, and the rest of the information has been thoroughly revised where necessary and left alone where it hasn't been, because there are, you know, you can't change the laws of physics, and so the chapters that look at how sound is created and the laws of physics, they're the same. You know, the history of the paranormal hasn't changed. But, you know, our perception of it's changed. Yes. If you think back to some of the things that ghost hunters used to do, in the 60s, 70s, even the 80s, they'd be hauled off, you know, they'd be hauled off in front of the judge.
Yeah. And everything old is not new again. The new, in this case, stays new. So, I was reading what you wrote in the introduction of the book about ghosts existing, and that everyday people experience ghosts in one way or the other. Some see, some hear, some interact with them. And a question popped into my head that you may or may not have an answer for, but here goes anyway. When a group of people are out on an investigation and have been told very little about a particular room, let's say, that was quite active and full of negative energy, if they were split up and entered the room alone, what percentage do you think might have the same experience, or would it vary because each individual has their own belief system?
It would vary. The percentage would be different as well, because, you know, groups are different. Groups are, you know, different sizes, groups made of different people.
Yeah, but one at a time.
I wouldn't say it's got anything to do with belief necessarily, because some of the effects could be attributed to physical phenomena, the environment. So that affects people in different ways. And I can't give you definitive answers to the specifics you asked, but I can give you some definitive answers. For example, with infrasound, we know from mass experiments on hundreds of people, several experiments, each involving hundreds of people would be more accurate, so thousands in total, that infrasound only affects about a third of the population, irrespective of age and anything, any other factor. So two-thirds of the population don't suffer from it and worry about it, but a third of the population are affected in such a way that it does significantly increase the number of experiences that they report and are likely to attribute to the paranormal. So it's more to do with expectation, preconceived ideas. If you take the same room with this, and it's how you define negative energy. Is there such a thing? I mean, I can think in physics there is, because you could fill the room with negative air ions, for example. So it would literally have negative energy. Psychically, I don't know how we could measure that. I don't know how you could define that.
Right.
It could have an oppressive ill feeling. It could be a room that people generally don't like. We've done experiments down the years at haunted locations where we've let people loose and we've asked them to mark areas that they like or dislike or how the area makes them feel. You know, and you hear it about homes, don't you? Well, that home made me feel really warm and fuzzy, and it just felt like home. And I immediately, and others are, couldn't even walk in the door. Mm-hmm. And you see that a lot with homeowners, home buyers.
Yeah.
But what we have noticed is that the areas are more predominantly associated with the paranormal phenomena being reported are also rooms where people with no prior knowledge don't like being. Now, you might say, well, that's because it's haunted and obviously they're picking up on the negative energy. Now, where we've been able to measure the environment, in two out of the three locations, we were able to find a physical reason why that room felt uncomfortable. In one, it was a background infrasound level, and in another, it was a balance between the humidity and the temperature. So people, when they went in there, they felt a bit sort of cold and a bit clammy and a bit shivery and a bit not very comfy in the room. So they didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many variables.
It is, and it's a lot of it is always attributed to the paranormal because it's more exciting to say that than try to figure it out. In a sense.
Well, it's also often the simplest explanation because, you know, if we start going into infrasound or electromagnetism or psychophysical variables, you know, the variables that exist from person to person, because we're all different, mm-hmm. That becomes, you know, to a lot of people, that becomes just overly complicated and they don't really get it. It's much easier to say, well, it was a murder there and, oh, it's obviously a ghost. Because that kind of makes sense to people. They can connect with that explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And that explanation is also reinforced by the media. It's reinforced in books, on television, in the newspapers. You know, ghosts are popular. They've always been popular.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not surprising that they attribute these odd sensations to the paranormal rather than, oh, that must be a variation in the ambient air pressure, which I can't ordinarily sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really difficult subject, this whole thing, ghostology, because, you know, with other, just like other metaphysical phenomena, it can't be reached through like objective studies of material reality in a sense. I mean, it's what we pick up, what we think, what we believe, what we're told. Uh-huh. It's like flip a coin, you know? And so as somebody who's writing a book called Ghostology, do you find that the study of ghosts is sometimes just kind of futile and scratch your head and wonder why you're not moving on to something else?
Sometimes it feels like that, usually at about 3 a.m.
It's approaching 3 a.m. now. Go ahead. Sorry. Now,
you know what I mean. You've been sitting there for hours and you're thinking, why didn't I pick train spotting or knitting strands of spaghetti together, because mm-hmm. it's going to be better than this. I want to go to bed. But the reality is, actually, the phenomena have been reported. People have been seeing, you know, dead people for forever. Mm-hmm. There were probably ghosts. You know, the caveman at the back of the cave probably got spooked by believing he just saw the ghost of Mrs. Caveman's mother. We are an eternally curious creature. you know, these phenomena exist. They've been reported across every culture for, well, for as long as we've been writing and drawing pictures on walls, people have been seeing ghosts. And I'll bet you that there was another caveman in that cave that looked up and went, nah, that's just because that moose head on the wall over there from the blood's run down the wall now and it's left a pattern. Because people, you know, we like order. We like to understand the world around us. We like to explore the world around us. That's why, you know, we've got people blasting off to travel into space this week. And that's why we have guys and gals orbiting the Earth now in the space station, because that's part of being human. And when somebody says, I've seen a ghost, everybody looks up and goes, where? And then the next thing is, well, I didn't see it, or, oh, I can. And then some people will accept that and go, that's really cool, I've just seen a ghost, whoa. And others will go, wait a minute, there might be something else here going on. Daniel Defoe, the author of Robinson Crusoe, wrote a book in 1725, which has the longest, one of the longest book titles I think it's about 47 words in the title. It's actually made in ghostology somewhere. But the short book is called Apparitions, the study, you know, the consideration of apparitions. And he says, back in 1725, he was saying, look, you know, it's not necessarily demons, angels, and ghosts. It could be something more normal.
Interesting.
But people do see them, and that requires that, you know, like a mountain, somebody's got to climb it because it's there.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, because we do learn from that. And we just learned something in the chat room. Kat did a little research, and as she suspected, knitting spaghetti is a thing. Just so you know.
I knew it was a thing, because I've used that line before, and I have a slide in one of the presentations that actually has a lady knitting spaghetti.
So there you go.
I was on solid ground, but thanks, Kat.
Yeah, no, that was pretty funny.
I don't think there are many hobbies, you know, however bizarre you are. Probably the most bizarre hobby I've discovered in the last 5 years, and it's a perfectly legitimate hobby, and I'm sure somebody can go and Google it now, is collecting used condoms.
You know, I would believe that. And if people who live in urban areas just kind of walk along the street, somebody they're there for the taking, you know. I mean, it's not difficult to get a hold of that and make a collection of it. I would kind of frown upon that myself, but you know,
that one struck me as being a bit, you know, that was particularly bizarre, I thought.
Well, there are a lot of bizarre people out there.
Again, there is this human trait to collect stuff. You know, we fill our homes with clutter, ornaments that are worthless trinkets that, you know, we adorn the shelves and the window ledges, and they have meaning for us. They help us, you know, connect with places or people, or you know, fond memories, or we just aesthetically like them. They please us. I've got, you know, It tends to affect men more than women. You know, men are the collectors, and there are psychologists that have looked at why men collect stuff. You know, why, you know, they collect stamps and bottle tops and beer labels and parts from lawn mowers and bits of jet engine and all manner of stuff. But you know, it's part of being human. You know, we don't collect handbags and shoes. That's there are some men that do, but
well, that's a whole nother story.
And, it's a whole new chapter, actually.
And Kat just wrote in the chat room, I'm not looking that one up. So yeah, okay, we're almost time out, but I want to. I know that you're crossing the big pond this year to be here for Spirit Quest.
No, I'm not.
You're not?
No,
they won't let you out? Or they won't let you in?
both.
Oh, it must be the new strain.
It's because I don't think, you know, most of America is now, you know, well down the path of vaccination. Most here in the UK, we're into the 70-80% double vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
What hasn't yet happened is the agencies and the international sort of governing governments haven't coordinated how we're supposed to travel in and out of our own countries yet without having 43 tests. You know, it's not that you can't go to, well, at the moment you could, after July the 19th, I can go to America. I don't know if America is letting us in until August, but there are just so many complications.
Yeah.
And so much additional cost.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. The Olympics now banned all visitors to, or all spectators as well. So it's,
we're not done with this pandemic yet.
No, we're not. Not by a long way. No, it just keeps changing and getting a little better, a little worse, and whatever. So, I guess.
Yeah, I'm no expert on you know, these. I'm good at ghost hunting. I'm
mm-hmm. not good,
you know, I follow the rest of the rules with. But I've been following the. It's not even connected to ghostology, but the conspiracy theories around COVID.
Mm-hmm.
The 5G one was the best, I think. You can catch it from a phone mast. And people burnt them down.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Do I get the opportunity to plug a second book?
Yes, quickly, please.
Very quickly, because my other book came out 2 weeks after the revised edition of Ghostology. This is the book by the Society for Psychical Research. You can't get it just yet. But they'll all be on the same Amazon page in a few weeks. And this is specifically 200 pages of, I think, some of the best information. If you use any item of equipment, from a cat toy to a Tesla car to the most expensive EM devices and to a toy carousel or a teddy bear with an EMF meter shoved up its back passage,
mm-hmm.
you will want this book. Published by the Society for Psychical Research, using equipment guidance notes for investigators. It'll be available in Kindle and print edition by the end of the month, I reckon.
Well, why don't you find some time down the line and come back and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Sounds good. All right. Well, I better set you free and allow you to get some much-needed sleep because,
I'm going to be awake in 2.5 hours.
That's just what I was going to say. You're a night owl, but you usually get up with the roosters. So
only when the kids are at school.
Well, they're back at school. Yeah.
Yeah, little monkeys.
Well, you know what? It's really nice to know that I have at least one person who loses sleep over me. So thank you for that.
I will always lose sleep over you.
Oh, yes, you will.
Oh, sure. And do you remember that nice gentleman called Richard?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I've sent him. I've passed on communications and.
Thank you very much.
And nice man from Del Monte. He said yes. He will. He or you will be. You'll have to get in touch with one another by some mechanism. I think you're both friends on my Facebook. So.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you very much.
If that doesn't work, I'll bounce
You'll
messages.
Jump in.
I'll bounce messages twixt you both.
Okay. Perfect. I appreciate that very much.
Oh, I told you what his answer would be. Though.
I know. All right, guys, we'll fill you in on this later. Anyway, we've got to go. So thank you, Steve. Thank you all for listening.
It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure too. And for everybody listening in, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.